saha hi salila ashana, only drinking water. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. During the Chakshusha Manvantara, there was a great king named Satyavrata, who was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Satyavrata performed austerities by subsisting only on water. Purport. The Lord assumed one fish incarnation to save the Vedas at the beginning of the Swayambhuva Manvantara. And at the end of the Chakshusha Manvantara, the Lord again assumed the form of a fish just to favor the great king named Satyavrata. As there were two incarnations of Varaha, there were also two incarnations of the fish. The Lord appeared as one fish incarnation to save the Vedas by killing Hayagriva, and he assumed the other fish incarnation to show favor to King Satyavrata. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chakshunari Hamina Tasmashun Gurave Namaha Vanchako Patrobhischa Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So it's described in this verse that there are two different incarnations of the Matsya avatar. One who previously appeared to save the Vedas and killing the Hayagriva demon. I don't know if this has been discussed before, but of course there's also an incarnation of Krishna called Hayagriva, who also saves the Vedas and returns them to Lord Brahma. So it's interesting that there's two similar pastimes, one where Hayagriva appears to be an incarnation, and one where Hayagriva is now a demon who is killed by Matsya. Anyway, that was in the Swayambhuva Manvantara many millions of years previously. Now, this particular incarnation, the second incarnation of Matsya, is at the end of the Chakshusha Manvantara, which is the Manvantara just preceding ours, which is the Vaivishvata Manu. And, of course, Vaivishvata Manu is, Satyavrata becomes Vaivishvata Manu in his next life. So, we've had several verses here that are discussing Krishna's avatar, or Krishna's descent into this material world, why Krishna comes to this world. We've been discussing this. We have fairly short purports, which doesn't give a lot of direction, but also gives a certain amount of leeway to expand as one chooses or as appropriate. So we'd like to talk a little bit about Krishna's appearance in this world, why he appears. In his first incarnation, Matsya appeared to preserve religious principles, to restore the Vedas, and also to kill the demons. So we know that those are two of the reasons given in the Bhagavad Gita in the fourth chapter for the Lord's descent. And of course, his third reason is Purichanaya Sadhunam, to deliver the devotees, to give protection. So in the second incarnation of Matsya, this particular purpose is given more stress. It's described here that because of Satyavrata's austerities and his devotion, he is given special protection to the Lord. And so in this fish incarnation, Prabhupada says that he assumed this form of a fish just to favor the great king named Satyavrata. So Krishna tends to favor his devotees, and he often appears to protect and to give special favor to his devotees. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit today. Krishna's protection, or Krishna's, how he favors his devotees. So I'd like to talk about how Krishna is equal to all, but yet he is partial to his devotees. Secondly, how Krishna shows, the ways that Krishna shows that favors the devotees. And thirdly, how we can achieve the favor of Krishna and become favored and protected by him. So this question of how Krishna favors his devotees is an interesting philosophical question, because on one hand we have the concept that God is equal to all living entities. He's the father of everyone, the seed-giving father of all living entities. He's naturally inclined and favorable towards all his part and parcels, to all the jivas. But yet sometimes we see that he particularly favors his devotees. In fact, this question has been raised in the Srimad Bhagavatam and answered in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Particularly in the beginning of the seventh canto, Maharaj Yudhishthir asked this question of Narada Muni. Because Yudhishthir had been in the Swayambhara sacrifice, the Rajasuya sacrifice, where Krishna killed Shishupal. And Yudhishthira had actually seen that Shishupal was liberated. They all saw, in the presence of the whole assembly, the spirit soul leave the body of Shishupal and merge into the body of Krishna, right? Or go back to, or raised up in the air, and then came back into Krishna. So at any rate, they all understood that he was liberated. That he not only liberated, but he actually joined back, had relationship, direct relationship with Krishna. So how is this? Shishupal was a great demon. He had insulted Krishna continually, blasphemed Krishna throughout his entire life. In fact, I think, you know, there's a long story I won't get into, but I think he got 100 insults before Krishna would kill him because of some boon he gave to his, Krishna gave to his mother or something. But that's another story. But at any rate, after he was a great offender, but yet he became liberated personally by Krishna. So Yudhishthira wondered about this. So how could this happen? How could a person like this gain this benefit? And so it's actually described how Krishna is equal to all. How he is, actually in many ways, he is equal to both the demons and the devotees. And in fact, anyone who comes in contact with Krishna gains that benefit, gains instant purification by that association with Krishna. So Narada said, it's a very well-known verse to Yudhishthira, therefore by enmity or by devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by lusty desire, by all of these or any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or other concentrates his mind upon the Lord, the result is the same, for the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. So this is the equality of the Lord, the equality of Krishna. He cares about every living entity, and he rewards every living entity according to their desires and according to their relationship with him. So there is some sense of reciprocation. Might, so it still doesn't exactly answer, then why does he seem to give special favor to the devotees? Well, the Bhagavad Gita 9:29 says, Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So in one sense, Krishna is saying, I am not partial to anyone. I am equal, but yet. But still, if one is my devotee, then I do give some special relationship, that I'm a friend to him, and that devotee is my friend, one who is in devotion and is in me. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that this is not a contradiction. He said this is natural. A person who is a great humanitarian, who wants to save, you know, people from distress or help many children, still, that person, although they have this feeling towards all children, they will certainly have a special feeling towards their own children. This is a very natural thing because there's a special relationship. Naturally, there will be some special reciprocation. And even we can see someone may have several children and they love all of their children. Any of us, we all know that we love all of our children equally. But yet at the same time, if one child, Prabhupada has also given this example, if one child is particularly attentive, very obedient, always trying to please the parent will feel a little special affection for that child. Again, it's natural. It's not partiality. It's natural reciprocation. So Krishna is like this. Krishna reciprocates in kind to how we approach him. So one who approaches Krishna in love, in devotion, in a mood of surrender, naturally Krishna very much appreciates that, and he reciprocates in kind. So the demon wants to know Krishna only in the form of death. That is how he'll reciprocate. The devotee wants to reciprocate with Krishna in love, then Krishna reciprocates in love with the devotee. So how does Krishna favor his devotees? Well, I was thinking of several ways that we can see Krishna's giving this sort of special favor to his great devotees. And there are many, many examples throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. He favors his devotee by giving protection, by giving knowledge, by giving a better birth, material opulence, by giving liberation, and ultimately by giving devotional service. So if we look at these a moment, we see that Krishna often gives protection to his devotees. We see here, of course, Satyavrata is given protection. We will read how the great flood comes and how Matsya will come and provide a boat, and he will carry him and protect him from this inundation. So Satyavrata receives special protection from the Lord. Of course, probably our best example is Prahlad Maharaj, who was personally protected by Lord Nrisingadev. We can see Haridas Thakur was protected by Lord Chaitanya when he was being flogged in 21 marketplaces. We see examples of the Pandavas continually being protected by Krishna. They were put in so many times, so much jeopardy. Well, one might think that they were always almost on the verge of extinction, but yet Krishna saved them over and over again. So we see that Krishna gives this kind of personal protection to his devotees. He also gives knowledge to his devotees. Of course, he speaks the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And later he will speak, we will see that he will recite the Vedas and impart knowledge unto Satyavrata and the Brahmins aboard the boat. Other examples, of course, Krishna directly instructs Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we can see so many other examples. Lord Kapila instructs his mother Devahuti in Sankhya Yoga and actually in devotional service as well. Lord Vrishabhadev comes and gives so many instructions. So in this way, Krishna gives spiritual knowledge to his devotees. And often we see he does this very personally, even on a one-to-one basis. It's not just that he, you know, hears knowledge and it kind of beams down from above. Usually it's very personal. He's speaking to, Kapila's speaking to Devahuti, Krishna's speaking to Arjuna, you know, in a very, very personal way, giving this knowledge to a devotee, to not only for the benefit of the whole world, but also to glorify that particular devotee and to establish and strengthen that relationship with the devotee. That's very wonderful. I mean, you can just imagine, what if Krishna instructed you in personally in Vedic knowledge? What an amazing experience that would be, wouldn't it? You can just imagine. I can't imagine, actually, but we could sort of imagine what that would be like. And we also see examples where Krishna bestows some special favor, some special, either in a future life or in this life, that he gives some opulence or he gives some special favor to devotees. We just read in the last chapter, we were reading about Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj, of course, was ultimately, you know, given the highest benefit, but he was also given the Sutala planet, where he was given great opulence. First, Krishna took everything away from Bali Maharaj, and then he gave everything. He gave him all material opulences. He gave him a kingdom in the Sutala planetary system greater than Indra's. Different examples, Chitraketu was given flying in his flower airplane all over the universe, is given so much like mystic power and facility. Dhruva Maharaj was granted, wasn't it the pole star, the north star? Very, very special planet. He had wanted a kingdom greater than his father's. Then he renounced that idea. He says, I don't really care anymore. That was simply broken glass. Now I am content. I'm completely content just in my relationship with you. And Krishna says, okay, that's fine, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. You know, even now that you don't want it, you're even more qualified. So now I'll give you this wonderful, wonderful planet to preside upon. We also see that Krishna gives liberation. He helps his devotees to go back to Godhead, to get completely out of this material world. And we saw that example, of course, but even with demons, like Shishupal. Of course, ultimately Shishupal wasn't a demon. Shishupal was a great devotee, playing the part of a demon for three births. But so he gave him liberation. Many other devotees also experienced this. Priyavrata was given liberation. Ajamil was personally delivered by Narayan, given another opportunity to perform devotional service, even though he was very fallen, but because he chanted his name, and then ultimately given liberation to, being able to go back to Vaikuntha. So in so many ways like this, Krishna favors his devotees. He's always giving them opportunities, always giving them opulences, protecting them, giving them knowledge, helping establish religious principles, and then ultimately, to his very dearest devotees, he gives the most important thing, devotional service. To be able to render pure devotional service directly to him, this is actually the greatest gift the devotee desires. And many devotees pray like this. Krishna tried to give Prahlad a benediction. Prahlad kept saying, no, I don't want anything. I'm content just in my devotional service to you. You must take something. All right, liberate my father. Nothing for myself. Ultimately, the devotee's desire is for devotional service. That we can remember Krishna, that we can always serve Krishna and never forget Krishna. That is really what a devotee wants, ultimately. So, nice verse from the Bhagavatam 5:6:18. Krishna says, those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily. So first they're saying liberation is not really such a special thing. It's quite easy. But he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him. So devotional service, direct service to Krishna is very rare. Not so easily bestowed. We have, sometimes we can only estimate, given a statement like this from Srimad Bhagavatam, how fortunate we are that we have an opportunity to render devotional service in the line of pure devotion given to us by Srila Prabhupada. It's a very, very special thing, very rare thing. Yeah, something that's just not common within the universe. So this very wonderful opportunity, a devotional service. And why does he not give it so freely? Well, of course, one reason it's hard to qualify, but one of the main reasons is that when Krishna awards devotional service, particularly pure devotional service, he gives himself to his devotee. So Krishna's not so anxious or willing to give that to someone who is not deserving or not appreciative or not sincere. But Krishna gives himself in devotional service. And Krishna feels indebted to his devotees. Hard for us to imagine. We have so little, we're so fallen, we have so little to offer, but yet any devotional service that's given, Krishna feels indebted to that devotee. He's so pleased and so happy by that act of devotional service. Of course, our best example we have is the gopis. That chapter, it's called The Reunion, after Krishna leaves the gopis, and then he comes back and he sees them, and they had this long discussion about why he did this, and very, very wonderful exchange. And at the very end, I think it's the last verse of that chapter, Krishna says, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. So Krishna is saying, I can't even repay my pure devotees the wonderful service that they do. So one has to be content within that devotion, within oneself. So this is the very special nature of pure devotional service, and the very special nature of devotees who are on this level of these wonderful, loving, reciprocal exchanges with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very rare, very wonderful opportunity. And so that is, of course, what we are striving for. We are performing devotional service to become purified from this material world, from so many material desires, so that we can again engage in that type of loving relationship and exchange with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the last topic I wanted to talk about is, how do we achieve this? How do we get this favor of the Lord? How do we obtain this? Of course, in one sense, the answer is very easy, but could be taken from many, many angles. We gain the favor of the Lord through pure devotional service, simply put. When we engage in service which is not motivated or interrupted, or when we engage in service which has no material consideration, is not contaminated by the modes of nature, which is anya vilasita shunyam, which is free from any other desires such as karma, yoga, or jnana. When we engage in this type of pure devotional service, we very quickly obtain the favor of Krishna. But how do we get there? Not so easy, always. To come to this position of becoming free from material desire, so that our only desire is to serve Krishna, is a process. The process is called sadhana bhakti. When we come from a contaminated state of having so many material desires, material anartas within the heart, we have to undergo the purificatory process of hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna, the processes of sadhana. And the best way to achieve this, the best way to perform sadhana, is through sadhu sangha, the association of devotees. The pure devotee and other advanced devotees of the Lord help us to understand the purpose of sadhana, help us to understand how to execute it properly, and understand its benefits. And through this association of devotees, we can become very strong in Krishna consciousness, very determined, and we are able to give up so many material desires. It's difficult to give up material attachment on one's own. But through the connection with the spiritual master and the association of devotees, one is able to do so, even though it may seem very, very difficult within this material world. So this importance of good association is stressed throughout our Vedic scriptures and by our acharyas. There's a very nice verse, 325.25, teachings of Lord Kapila on pure devotional service to his mother Devahuti. This is Satam prasangam mama viryasam vidho bhavanti hritkarna rasayanam kata tajjoshayad aspapavargavartmani shadharvatir bhaktir anukramishati. In the association of pure devotees, this word prasanga is given, which means, pra means superior, excellent, pure association, not just any sangha, but pure sangha. Discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So in this verse, the last line, Shradharvatir Bhaktir, is there, which is sort of an abbreviated, Nagaraj talked about this verse a couple months ago, it's sort of an abbreviated version of the process of devotional service. You know, there's those eight stages or whatever, but there, we have Shraddha, Ritir, Bhaktir, given in this verse of Bhagavatam. So in other words, talking about Shraddha, faith, and that the previous verse mentioned, verse 24, that this is done in association of devotees. It's the association of advanced devotees that help us to break material attachments. So our faith, our Shraddha, develops in it with attachments, sadhusanga with devotees, then eventually taste, ratir, begins, and then the higher stages of bhava, prema, etc., of pure bhakti, come after this. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, the process of advancing in Krishna consciousness and devotional service is described here. The first point is that one must seek the association of persons who are Krishna conscious and who engage in devotional service. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. Simply by theoretical knowledge or study, one cannot make any appreciable advancement. But one must give up associations of materialistic persons and seek the association of devotees, because without the association of devotees, one cannot understand the activities of the Lord. So also in this verse, it's talking about the pastimes of the Lord, the discussion of the pastimes and activities. And those cannot be appreciated by materialistic people. They can actually only be appreciated and work upon the heart in the association of devotees. I also wanted to read something from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport in the same verse in his Srimad Bhagavatam commentary. And he has a little bit different angle here, which I thought was very interesting. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, only by association with devotees does the mind develop attraction to the Lord. The stages are described here. The previous verse mentioned that association should be desired. Then faith first arises. From excellent pra-association of the devotees, stories of my pastimes become nectar for the ears. From inferior association, there is only bhajana kriya, but the stories do not become nectar. Thus, from excellent association, the stories cause anartha nivritti. Then those stories cause nishta. Then he goes on to talk about how ruchi and ultimately bhava and prema are developed. So I thought this was quite interesting. I read this again. From excellent pro-association devotees, stories of my pastimes become nectar. From inferior association, there's only Bhajna Kriya, and thus from excellent association, the stories are caused Anartha Nivritti. Now, what does all this mean to us? If we don't have strong association and understand Krishna consciousness as given by a pure devotee, then we only can make so much advancement. So it's described that there's an initial attraction is naturally there in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. And one may even be attracted to the processes of hearing and chanting Bhajana Kriya. So, but if one does not seek advanced association, good association, the Anartha Nivritti, the ridding the heart of material contamination will not take place. So sometimes we observe this. We see some devotees are attracted to chanting, but they're not really making strong advancement. Because the next stage, the real advancement is Anartha Nivritti, of clearing the heart of material contamination, of giving up unwanted things, of giving up material desire. So the key is described here is having good association. Sometimes we see it works the other way too, that those who do not want to give up material desires, they seek association that is not very strong, and thus that reinforces, right? It reinforces the practice of, you know, I'm just with other people who aren't very interested in giving up material things either, so we sort of stay in our complacent position. So it becomes, you know, sort of self-reinforcing like that. So what if we find ourselves in that situation, which we might? It means that we have to make a conscious decision. If we want to give up material desires and make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you know, first of all, we need to make a decision to do that. And the best way to do that is to get strong association. To perform our process of sadhana and association devotees, to take shelter, of course, of the pure devotee and the spiritual master, and also take shelter of those advanced devotees that can help us in Krishna consciousness. And they can, you know, not simply, you know, encourage us and reinforce our bad habits, but actually will push us a little bit or preach to us or at least set good example and model for us good habits of sadhana and giving up material desires. So it becomes a very, it becomes a important process that we do not maintain, you know, even saying, oh, well, I like chanting Hare Krishna, but, you know, I don't particularly like following the principles or anything else or performing other sadhana. We won't make very much advancement. But if we gain good association, this sadhu sangha, and perform sadhana bhakti in association with devotees, then we start clearing those material desires. We go through the Anartha Nivritti stage to the point of nishta, or steadiness. And once one is steady in one's Krishna consciousness, you know, then all the nectar comes, right? Then comes ruchi, shakti. In other words, all the taste of Krishna consciousness is there. But it's like we can't... Prabhupada once said that spiritual life and material life go ill together. Often we try to balance these. You know, I think it's natural. You know, we have material desires. We're in this material world. We're not pure devotees. We admit all of that, of course. But if we try too hard to maintain our material life and at the same time try to somehow advance in spiritual life, well, what's the example is given? It's like rowing the boat with the anchor still down, right? You can make a little progress, but it's really tough. If you pull the anchor up, then, you know, all of a sudden the boat takes off. You know, so if we can pull up that anchor, you know, and through good association, start to begin, you know, gradually, maybe at first, to give up material desires, at least have a conscious attitude of desire to give up material desires. If we at least do that, if we're praying to Krishna, to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, to Radharani, to Srila Prabhupada every day, please help me to become free of these material desires, you know, then there is every hope for progress. And if we seek out a good association which will encourage us in that way, we'll definitely make progress in Krishna consciousness. Okay. So I'll stop at that point. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there questions or comments? Yes.
just wondering, Prabhu, if you recalled where that statement by Narada Muni that even by enmity and affection or lusty desires, if one develops affection for Krishna, do you remember where it is?
I think I have it written down. It's 7th canto. Yeah, 7:126.
Oh, okay.
First chapter of 7th canto.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As far as giving up material desires by having good association with devotees, I'm a little bit confused because we left the spiritual world in the first place because of envy or because of some even like small material desire. And we were in the best association, surrounded by pure unalloyed devotees. And so now here we are with probably, we've accumulated obviously even more material desires. So it seems almost like what hope, even if we're surrounded by really amazing devotees, still we have that free will to, like, what's really going to get rid of that envy that got us here in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. That's our problem. That's our problem is that we have this envy, which has been there since time immemorial practically. Of course, Krishna assures us in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, once we return, one will never again come back to this material world. And I think Prabhupada has sort of explained, it's like we've learned. You know, once we get to the point of, again, coming back to the point of pure devotional service, to the point that we can return back to Godhead and be with Krishna, we'll have learned. We'll have experienced this material world. We'll have known what a terrible place it was. We'll have known how much we've suffered. And having learned that lesson, then Krishna says, you will not return again, you know, to this material world. However, one could say, theoretically, the free will is always there. Because without free will, there wouldn't be love, right? We wouldn't be able to surrender freely in love without free will. So one could say that theoretically, that possibility could be there. But Prabhupada said that in reality, practicality, we won't return. We won't go back. But it takes some effort and some time, you know, to, because that's the state we're in now. We're in a state where we're trying to rid ourselves those material desires, but they're still there in the heart. You know. But, you know, so we have to endeavor with patience, enthusiasm, determination. Is that okay? Not quite. Yes. Well, Krishna purifies us. I mean, it's like, you know, the example is given like, you know, like fire, very, very, very purifying. And when, it probably gives an example, of course, of like the iron rod. You know, if you have an iron rod, you put it in fire, it's still iron in a sense, but it takes on all the qualities of fire because it's glowing and has heat and gives off light. So in relationship or connection with Krishna, Krishna is the, you know, complete pure and the complete, you know, purifier. So Krishna also has the ability to purify us and to purify the heart. And I guess there's that faith that develops in a devotee. And because it says it in scripture, but we also have to develop that faith that that Krishna is capable of purifying even me. You know, and my spiritual master is capable of purifying even me. Somehow or another, you know, I can become pure of all of those lifetimes of material desires, because that's the power of devotional service. It's the power of Krishna, and it's the power of Krishna's devotees. Because Krishna is ultimately stronger than Maya, right? Krishna is the controller, he describes in the Bhagavad Gita. I think it was just being said the other day in class. Krishna is control of the material energy, and therefore he's more powerful than the material energy. Right now, the material energy seems more powerful than us because we're tatashta shakti, we're subject to being covered. But Krishna can remove that covering in an instant. He can take away Maya's power very easily and empower us towards pure devotional service. So a lot of it, when we talk about surrender, it's not just a theoretical thing. It's a very real process. And a lot of surrendering is that question of faith. It's saying, okay, I can't do it on my own. I know that I'm not powerful enough. I'm not pure enough to go back to Godhead to become free. But I have that faith. If I surrender to Krishna, and you'll take care of me. And he'll take us back.
In Bhagavad Gita you have in front of you, 9.3, Prabhupada says, the first class devotee, there is no chance to fall down. Second class does not fall down. Third class fall down.
But if one reaches a certain stage of devotion, he will not fall
down. Right.
Yeah.
So it will be, what I understand, you can correct me, it will be a misconception to say that material envy can exist in Swarup Shakti, internal potency of Krishna Loka. If we do, then we fall into Mayavad conception.
Right.
So Prabhupada in 3.16.29 clearly said twice that once Krishna accepts someone, never can come to this material world. Then again, end of the essay, he said, this is the conclusion, that once one enters into Vaikuntha, never comes to material world. Therefore, this material envy is nothing to do in the spiritual world. Hmm. The spiritual envy, it is a rasa. It's a very nectar of devotion, Prabhupada talks about it. But it is not a mundane envy. So we cannot come to that conclusion.
Right. In other words, whatever that... The envy we experience in the material world is different than that doesn't exist in the spiritual world, is what Prabhupada Govinda is saying. So of course that's a whole another discussion. How did we ever come, how did we ever get here? Why did we fall down? But it's a little different nature, it's a little different quality than the material envy which we've acquired now, which will no longer be existence. Yes, Mahabodhi.
It seems that we're talking about actually the same energy, but it's been materialized and spiritualized. Like lust is actually the perverted reflection of our love for Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this envy that we feel in the material world is actually a perverted reflection of the spiritual envy that we experience in the spiritual. Is that true?
Well, everything in this material world is somehow a perverted reflection. And of course, everything comes from Krishna. He has his different energies and they manifest in different ways. Whether the envy that we feel here is a reflection of the original envy that which caused us to fall from the spiritual world, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I don't know if I have the answer to that. It's not the same.
Shadow potency exists in full. Prabhupada, in Mayapur, we have a back to Godhead called Bhagavad Darshan, not back to Godhead in English name. And always on the top, since Prabhupada's time, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hai Andhakar Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Radhikar. Prabhupada wanted that way and they still published. Wherever Krishna, absence, dark. Prabhupada always says, darkness means absence of light and light means absence of darkness. It's not possible darkness exists within the light. Or you cannot say it is dark, but light is also there. That is a Mayavad conception.
Well, that's understood, but I think the question is...
The question is that...
Where did the envy come from originally, before the living entity came to the material world, when they were in the spiritual world?
Everything has an original representation in the spiritual world. That is correct. That is required for loving exchange between the Lord and his associates. So when the jiva, as per Prabhupada explains in third canto, that when the jiva desired by the capture of allure activities to enjoy the material nature, originally they were Krishna conscious, but that is not fully blossom of pure love and Swarup Deha or eternal form. But it was pure Krishna conscious, Vasudev consciousness. Then they develop a desire. At that time, that separate interest, the moment separate interest from Krishna to enjoy, false ego appeared. Here I am, another Pran Govinda. I, the original, forgot. Now I am taking death. So that's where the envy, greed, everything. And the envy generally comes from the frustration. It's a gradual progression Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur gives. When I cannot satisfy my senses, it has to come to, oh, God is doing everything, why not? Why He has everything, why not me? But this is natural because jivas are pleasure-seeking by nature. So in that verse you have quoted, I appreciate, thank you, that the six way to absorb into Krishna. But then two ways Prabhupada also says is not bhakti because it's not favorable, kamsa and Shishupal. In that category also, the other two, the bhakti and sneha, affection, belongs to, according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's in commentary, belongs to Vaidhi Bhakti. And the last comes, also Prabhupada said, the original enemy for all the soul here. Last, but that last, in order to enter into spiritual world, one has to, as you said, nistha. Before nistha, anartha has to be completely, that 16 elements of anartha that explaining by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his book, that 16 anartha, all has to be finished, means the last has to go. So that last has no place in spiritual world. But in the entire ultimate progression of spiritual life, then there is a prema, sneha, mano, rago, anurago, then madana, mohana, madanakya. Like today is Gadadhar Prabhu's appearance day, is a madanakya form. At that time, anurag, the gopis, their original lust revives. But in between, there is no lust. There is, but that lust is pure form. It has nothing to do with the material lust.
Thank you.
No, it's not same energy. Shadow, no, because it is in Brahma Sangita Prabhupada quote, chayeva jasya bhuvanani vivarti durga, chayeva, it is shadow and reflection. My shadow, you cannot say what color I am, you cannot say what character I am, how personality I am, how beautiful I am, or whatever it is. I'm not trying to glorify, I'm sorry. But my shadow does not say that. So the material energy that produced this lust or envy, you cannot say it is in the spiritual world. Spiritual world is a real form, real everything. Here is a shadow potency. Maya is a shadow potency. Maya, lust, envy, all these things will not produce anything about spiritual world. Therefore, guru has to be required.
Okay. I think you'll have to continue this as after class. It's a great discussion, a wonderful topic. Any last thing? Okay. Jai Prabhupada. Hare Bol.